McGinn. Options inside the box. Hayes, what a ball for Aberdeen! Johnny Hayes! The breakthrough! Aberdeen have been in control of, and now they hit the front.
Good evening and welcome to episode 74 of the By the Minute AFC podcast. We're back. It seems like ages since we've spoken to you out there. My name is Martin Clunas. I'll be your host this evening. I'm joined tonight by regular guest Richard Hay. How are you doing, Richard?
I'm okay, thank you, Martin.
Have you had a fabulous few weeks without football?
Yeah, it was long, wasn't it? It was long, especially because obviously we've gone into the break on the back of that win at Tynecastle. So I think everybody just wanted to get playing again.
And we're also joined by Jack from the Stats and Miniskirts blog. How are you doing, Jack?
Doing well, thank you. Thanks for having me on again, guys.
No problem. It's a delight to have you back. Now, we've got a packed show for you this evening. We've obviously got Saturday's game against Stranraer to talk about. We've got an upcoming home game against Dundee. We have your feedback topic tonight as well, which of course was the applauding an opposition goal saver performance. And we'll have a little bit of a chat about the transfer window as well. Why not? We'll just get right into it now. Saturday, we played in the Scottish Cup against Stranraer. A fairly comfortable 4-0 victory for the Dons. Now, Richard, an unchanged side again. First time, and I think it's under Derek McInnes that we've had four games running without a change. Shows he was really taking the Scottish Cup seriously. There wasn't going to be any banana skins this time, was there?
Well, I'm just going to correct your stats because I'm that type of person. If we keep the same team on Friday night, it'll be five games running, and that'll be the first time under McInnes. And to be fair, probably the first time for a good few decades, I would suggest. No, and I didn't expect to see any changes because Derek McInnes is well aware of the importance of this competition. And well aware that any slip-ups or any mistakes against a side like Stranraer, even, frankly, a side like Ross County, the next round, will not be viewed very kindly. He is still in that position where a large percentage of our support is willing to jump on him for any kind of narrow defeat, any kind of mishap, and any kind of signing they're not happy with, as we might come on to a bit later. So I wasn't surprised to see an unchanged team, plus obviously the fact that it's the first game after the winter break, after a few weeks off. They needed to get that 90 minutes under their belt. With the departures we've seen at the start of the transfer window, particularly Madison and Burns, who were mainstays on the bench in the last few weeks, it did free up some space for some youngsters, for Frank Gross and for Scott Wright. I'm glad that once the game was secure that we got to see a reasonable amount of them as well. So I think we looked sharp. I thought we looked on it, apart from maybe the first 15-20 minutes. Although it's a bit difficult to say because the standard of the opposition really wasn't up to much.
The opposition weren't great at all. What we will come to later is our feedback topic. I think their goalkeeper was their star performer, which you do expect against lesser sides. But Jack, we'll come to you. What did you make of the performance? I mean, Stranraer didn't really give us any sort of real challenge. So it was a game where it's a case of the Dons, we just had to go and win it, didn't we?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's difficult to gauge with, obviously, Stranraer have got plenty of problems of their own at the moment. They're not doing too well in their league campaign, so it's really hard to tell. It didn't seem like a game that was a potential banana skin for me, because they clearly are a team that are struggling for performances at the moment. So, a 4-0 win, you can't really complain at that at all. That's pretty much what you're looking for. You're looking for goals, you're looking for consistency again. It's good that he's picked the same team. It seemed to be the only option for me to pick the same team again given the winter break, so you can't really ask for much more than what we got. It wasn't necessarily the most a performance without imperfections, but it was really all you could ask for at this stage.
And as you mentioned, Richard, we saw some minutes for Frank Ross and Scott Wright as well, which is really good to see. I don't want to say people are going overboard. I think we're hearing a lot about their performances. I do think that it's important for them to play in these types of games because the game was won at the point that they both came on. But this is, you know, playing proper competitive football like this is far more important for them than playing in the Development League, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And Derek McInnes has gone on record again in the last week or so, about the standard and the quality of that development league. And, you know, at the moment we've got 9 players out on loan, which probably says as much as McInnes's words do about what he feels about the standard there. So Scott Wright and Frank Ross have been about squads on benches for a good while now, 2-3 years. They've been in and about that first team squad. They need to start making that breakthrough. And, you know, part of it is, yes, a manager that is willing to trust them. That's important. You have to have, for the long-term future of our club, a manager that is willing to take a risk now and then on young players. But equally, they have to do their bit in training. They have to be the ones battering the door down. And if there is a loan opportunity that comes up before the end of this window, they have to go there and they have to shine. Not just go there and get some games. If they're going to a lower league team, they have to go in and excel. Because, you know, I think they're 18, 19. Frank Ross is definitely 19, I think. They should be pushing for first-team involvement at that age. A little bit different guys like Conor McLennan, who's just 17. You can give him time to develop, time to grow. But Wright and Ross, yeah, they should really be knocking on the door right now. And the fact that they're not, partly that's based on the manager's preference for experienced players. I get that. You know, he's under pressure to win pretty much most games, I would say, outside of Celtic, definitely. So there's pressure on him there to keep with his experienced players. But ultimately, it's down to the players themselves, down to Scott Wright, Frank Ross, or anybody else to really make the case that they're indispensable. And I've not really seen any of our young prospects do that, either whilst they've been here or even after they've moved on. I don't think any of them have gone on to prove Derek McInnes wrong.
Well, yeah, I mean, on this podcast in particular, we've been great advocates of Kame Smith. I know you mentioned there about players going out on loan, but Kame Smith has obviously gone to Dundee United, you know, started off brightly for them, but since then, he's not had a look in, has he, Jack?
No, he hasn't. I mean, Kame Smith was always an interesting one because it was difficult to really tell how he was developing without him having that loan spell, without him really, the onus being placed on him. And then obviously Dundee United took him on, and he had that game where he got the hat-trick, and then we thought that we were missing something that was right under our nose, but it's just not really progressed since there. So I'm thinking for Kame, he was a very bright prospect when, as a young boy, but he just hasn't, I don't know if he hasn't really developed physically in the way that we would have wanted him to. He doesn't impose himself on, I wouldn't have said he imposes himself enough on the games that he's played for us. So at the moment, and if he's not doing that in the Championship, then you've really got to ask questions about whether it's going to be long term for him with us. So we'll see how that one pans out, but I imagine it's looking like it could be the end of his Aberdeen career quite shortly.
I mean, Martin, as you've said, we've been long-term fans on here, and that's really been based on the fact that, well, I personally think he's got tremendous technical ability, and I don't wish to dismiss him too quickly, and I sincerely hope he still can make an impact here, but it's clear that to make it at even the SPFL level, which is not the top level, as we all know, you need a lot more than just technical ability. You needed that drive, you need that ambition. You do need a bit of physicality. You can't just get away with being a sort of lightweight ball player. Look at Ryan Fraser, look at what he's had to do. Look at that interview he gave the other week about changing his eating habits and things like that. So there's a lot more to it than just having that technical ability, which I think Kame Smith is really blessed with.
I do want to come to you on this, Richard, because you obviously put some stats up on the Twitter page the other day about the use of youth and homegrown players under Derek McInnes, and it's for Scottish players and for, you know, the youth products of the team, it doesn't make good reading, does it?
Well, it shows a distinct trend under Derek McInnes that the percentage of minutes played by our youth products is going one way, and that's down. So 2013-14, Derek McInnes' first season, 36% of SPFL minutes were played by guys who came through our youth system. That's down to only 15% this season, and it's been declining year on year. Now, part of that is because that first season, for example, Russell Anderson played quite a lot of minutes. He's obviously no longer part of that number. Peter Pollitt was a bigger part of the side back then. He's had a lot less minutes this season. But yeah, the other part of it is that back then, season 13-14, and it's to do largely with the fact that we've increased the quality of the squad in the intervening years. Back then, guys like Joe Shaughnessy or Clark Robertson were getting starts or getting time off the bench. Guys who probably wouldn't get a look in now to the 18, to be perfectly honest. In all fairness to him, and Joe Shaughnessy's done well to carve out a career at St Johnstone and looked very solid there. But really, I'm not sure they would be getting the same opportunities for minutes now this season, because the squad has got better year on year. I don't think anyone could really dispute that. The other number is percentage of minutes by Scotland under 21 players. And this is just really mirroring a tweet that the SPFL Stats Twitter account put out, showing the percentages for all teams. And I guess it's probably not that much of a surprise that most of the teams in the top six were the teams showing the fewest minutes by Scottish under 21s. I think Celtic did relatively well because they've got Tierney for starters. I think there was generally a trend that if you've got the finances, you're going to bulk up your squad and you're not going to need is the wrong word, but you're not going to have the kids on the bench through necessity that a lot of other teams will have. People are always demanding, you know, play the youth. It's a cyclical thing. You can get maybe three or four good prospects coming through in a batch, like we had with the Fivey, Grimmer, Ryan Fraser batch. And then there can be nothing for a few years, and it can be frustrating like that. In the past, McInnes has shown, like in Derek McInnes' very first home game, he gave a 16-year-old Craig Sorry a start way back in 2013. So I don't think he's resistant to the idea of playing youth, but I do think that he wants to put out his best team week in, week out.
I think that is the problem, isn't it? That, you know, Derek's got to juggle the demands of being the second, what we are, the second best team in the country, with trying to bring on young players, and it's a tightrope that he has to walk, isn't it, Jack?
It certainly is. I mean, I feel a bit sorry for him, because obviously the stats don't read particularly well in the sense that it seems like it comes across almost on paper as if he's a manager who's got his favourites, who sticks with his favourites and doesn't give youth a chance. But I mean, you can only give the young players a chance that are actually performing well, that are actually impressing. And it might just be a case that there aren't players that are doing that at the moment. It might be a case that there's players who have got glimpses of it, but they're just not quite ready. So it's difficult for him because he's got to choose from what's there. So I think maybe the questions or the issue maybe could be potentially one that lies, you know, deeper within the youth system. Are we producing the players in the right manner? Are we developing the players in the right manner? And is our scouting network at that level, you know, working as it should be? Because it's not exactly a particularly wide scouting network that we have at the youth level. So, I mean, it doesn't lay completely at Derek McInnes's door. I think it's definitely a wider issue.
It certainly is a worry, I think, going forward. But, you know, we have to put faith in the manager. I think, you know, we've been doing very well for the past few seasons. But I think going forward, it's something that will be looked at. And there is quite a lot of grumbling. We see it on the social media accounts, and you hear it in the stands as well about young players not getting a chance. So, of course, the victory put us through into the draw. The draw that was shambolically done by Rod Stewart. And he pulled out Ross County for us. Still don't know if we're going to be on television yet. As we're recording this, Raith Rovers and Hearts are currently playing. Until that match is decided, we're probably not going to know. But if we have an Edinburgh derby, I don't think we're going to be on television. So hopefully a 3 o'clock Saturday game would be nice for the cup. Now, before we move on to Friday night's Dundee game, we're going to have a wee chat about the transfer window. This enjoyable moment that we've all been waking up every morning in a cold sweat, hoping we don't see the words Johnny Hayes on your Twitter or Facebook timeline. The Dons, we have ended Wes Burns' loan spell. He's been sent back and he's now gone to Fleetwood. James Madison is now back at Norwich. There's talk about he might come back. We shall see. And we've also lost Callum Morris. But I think the most surprising thing is yesterday we signed Ryan Christie on loan from Celtic. Jack, it has divided opinion, hasn't it?
It certainly has. Obviously, much circulated tweet has come up in conversation again and again. For me, it was quite a surprising move when I heard it. I wasn't entirely sure what to make of it, but a pleasant surprise. I mean, well, for me, you've got to be happy when you bring in a player of that quality, regardless of whether it's a loan and all those sort of mitigating circumstances. So he's a quality player. He's got attributes that will offer to the team and complement what we have already. So I think you can't really not be happy with that sort of signing.
Richard, what's your stance on this one? I mean, we've loaned a player from the team that is directly above us in the division, and we're the second best team in the country. Doesn't it smack us a little bit small time?
I think we have to be realistic that over the next 6 months, which is the duration of this loan, our rivals are the Rangers and Hearts. Those are the two teams which we are going to be battling against, well, maybe not Hearts, over the next 6 months. Yeah, we might draw Celtic in the Cup and we'd hope to beat them. And obviously Ryan Christie is likely, we don't know for certain, but likely to be ineligible for that. And because he's ineligible, he'll probably make the same amount of contribution that Wes Burns would have done if he were still here. Ultimately, I think that he is going to improve our squad over the next 6 months. I don't think there's any doubt about that. Certainly from he's an upgrade on Wes Burns. Does he improve the starting 11? Probably not. Is there an expectation that we will play every single week in the starting 11? Probably not either. Is he going to really stifle the long-term development of one of our younger players by bringing him in? I don't think so. I think, you know, that sometimes the club has to look long-term, sometimes the club needs to look medium-term, and sometimes the club has to focus on the short-term. And I think this is a short-term deal which gives us a guy who knows what it's about at SPFL level and is a capable performer at this level. We've seen it. He's hurt us before. Interestingly, reading Brendan Rodgers' comments this afternoon, apparently Derek McInnes has tried to take him in the summer as well. So it's been a long-standing interest to bring him in. Listen, we'll see where we are come Tuesday night. I believe at the moment that this is a like-for-like replacement for Wes Burns. I don't have any kind of in-the-know status on this, but I think we'll see James Maddison back up here. Probably not till next Tuesday night, in fairness. Obviously, we're all hoping that Johnny Hayes and Niall McGinn are still here come Wednesday morning as well. But we won't know exactly where we stand until that window does slam shut, to use the cliche. But I think it's a good bit of business. And certainly if it comes just a like-for-like for Wes Burns, it's a very, very good bit of business.
I've heard and I've read suggestions that perhaps the loan has maybe going to be that in the summer we might get first refusal on him. Would he improve the squad if we were to sign him in the summer as and he would become our player? Would that make any difference, do you think?
Well, I think he probably would improve the squad, but I don't think that that's necessarily likely. I think that's based on too many people having played Football Manager and sort of arranged that. People are saying, oh, you know, we helped develop Celtic player for 6 months and that's a bad thing, then... Celtic might get an extra $50,000 on, you know, what they eventually end up giving him away for when he can't break into that team. Because again, I think it's Celtic are buying up a lot of these guys locally just as squad filler, to be honest. And they keep going out and spending a couple of million on the next big thing from Russian football or wherever, Israeli football. And they're going to get the minutes. And guys like Christie are going to be pushed out and pushed out. I'll be very, very surprised if Ryan Christie's career trajectory at Celtic doesn't end with a small fee move down to the Championship in England in a year's time.
It very much smacks of the same as the Scott Allen move, doesn't it, Jack?
Yeah, I mean, it does. I mean, I think there's a sense of that Celtic will need, or almost a pressure to sign players in the Scottish Premiership that are performing well, and at that time Christie was performing well, and obviously with, you know, the knowledge of who his father is and who his affinity lies with, it seemed like the way his career was going to go. I mean it's natural for a lot of our supporters to kind of start thinking about what's going to happen in the summer if they impress him. Will there be that chance to bring him in permanently? But I imagine that if he impresses, I think Rodgers will want to give him that opportunity to go back and, you know, try and stake his claim for a place in the squad there, as he's done, you know, with others that have gone on, to, you know, to make their way. I mean, Stuart Armstrong's a good case. He suffered a bit of loss in form under Ronnie Dyla, and he's obviously performing very well under Rodgers. So I think maybe Christie, it's just a case of him getting games, keeping fit, and then he'll get that chance back at Celtic in the summer. Are we really helping to develop him? I don't know if I would look at it that way. To be honest, I would look at it more selfishly from our point of view. You know, I mean, he's a quality player. I see him more as a potential light-for-light replacement for Maddison, I'll admit. But he's got that capability to play in behind the striker. He's good with the ball at his feet. He's got the vision. He's got the ability to pass. And these are all things that, you know, that really are going to be an asset to our team. So we've got to look at it from that point of view. What can he offer us, rather than kind of obsessing over the fact that he's a Celtic player.
And I think maybe if you want to compare him to Maddison, that's absolutely fine. I think Maddison had basically had one full season at Coventry playing. Van Christie's played a lot of SPFL football with Inverness Cali before he reached the point of prominence where Celtic picked him up. As I say, he's an established performer at this level. Yes, he might still have potential to get better and better, but we're not talking about some completely raw kid here. We're talking about a guy who we know can perform at this level.
Jack, do you, just obviously Richard gave us his thoughts on the James Maddison thing, what do you see? Do you see James Maddison coming back at all?
It's difficult to say at the moment because I think obviously it will depend on what happens with Alex Neil. It will depend on where Norwich find themselves in their own transfer situation come the end of the window. So I think it will be a wait and see thing. Personally, I've just got a feeling that it's not going to happen. I think because we thought at one point that it was tied up, McInnes thought that it was tied up. That just puts a bit of uncertainty in my mind that, you know, it's not happened now. So I'm starting to think, starting to question whether it will happen. I mean, obviously he's been a very bright player for us, so it's disappointing in a sense. But there was also, you know, difficulties in sort of where to fit him into the squad at times. And this is something that actually I'm sure Michael Stewart commented on Sports Scene, is that we've kind of returned to our best period of form, and we've returned to this sort of tried and tested, you know, McLean, Hayes, McGinn, all those guys that have been playing last season, and it's been Maddison that's suffered. So in that sense, I think if we've got Christie there to add competition, and we've got the guys, if we manage to, you know, maintain our players, then I won't be overly disappointed if Maddison doesn't end up coming back.
I think there's a couple of things to point out here. Firstly, that Maddison has played for Norwich this season, so you can only play for Norwich or Aberdeen for the rest of the season. He's been nowhere near Norwich's league squads. Now, Norwich made a lot of changes for their FA Cup ties against Southampton. James Maddison wasn't included in that. If you look at the coverage on the Norwich website for the replay, they came up with a line that said James Maddison is not eligible to play in the replay because he was he didn't return to the club until after the first game. But that's actually not true. The loan ended a few days before the FA Cup tie, so he would have been. So I don't know what they're playing at. I think I'm really not sure what they're playing at. I really think the delay is all down to the uncertainty of Alex Neil's position, to be perfectly honest. And yes, Norwich might lose a couple of other guys before the window closes as well on Tuesday. It could just be that this signing of Christie puts us in a better bargaining position with Norwich.
Well, what we'll do now is, I think we'll not entirely seriously, we'll myth bust some of the other rumours that have came up for the transfer window for Aberdeen. So obviously the Johnny Hayes saga is ongoing. So Jack, so we're going to be replacing him with Chris Commons, apparently. Discuss.
Not happening. Absolutely not happening. There's no way.
Yeah, the Chris Commons thing is total bullshit. It's his agent trying to drum up interest, trying to get Hibs to pay what they can to take him for the second half of the season. Absolutely not happening. The other point is as well that we can only take one player from another club in the SPFL. So we've got Ryan Christie from Celtic, obviously. So that really does rule it out on loan. So no, that's pure agent talk.
Well, delighted to hear that one then. So we're once again linked with Stevie May, as we always seem to be for every window. I don't think this one's going to happen for various reasons. I think that probably he could be offered more money by certain other clubs. But what do you guys think?
I think there's a chance of him coming here. He's obviously got an existing relationship with Derek McInnes. Preston want to see him get games, and, you know, ultimately, again, there could be a question mark over his long-term future there. And I just wonder if down the line he'd be somebody that we'd be prepared to spend money on, but not right now, because he has obviously been 13 months and barely played a game of football. So I think the thing is, it May could be a good player, but he'd take about 6 weeks to get up to speed. I can see it happening, but I don't see him making a huge impact now.
If he is available, this is a move that makes sense for me. Now, obviously, it's been rumoured that Dundee, Hearts and St Johnston were all interested. Now, the only potential competitor I see being there is if he'd fancy going back to St Johnston, because he knows the guys there. He'll have a relationship with a lot of the people there. So I would say they'd be the main other suitor if he is available. To be honest, I think a move to play for us would probably be a good situation for him. I can see he would certainly contribute in terms of being a different kind of striker. A striker that's probably a wee more capable outside the box than Adam Rooney is. I think as well, I mean, we talk about him needing 6 weeks to get up to speed. I'm not entirely sure if that would be the case. Obviously he had that heavy injury, but it's definitely a better option to bring in someone like Stevie May, who has been training with a club and who will have been featuring, I'm sure, in some sort of, you know, development games to get him back to match fitness. I don't know if he'll be as far away as we might anticipate. And I remember reading interesting comments from Ray McKinnon recently, talking about the kind of nature of the transfer market at this time of year, and obviously how often clubs are restricted to free agents or loans, and loans are always a much preferred option, because while that player might not necessarily have been playing first team football, and that's why they're available, they will have been playing actual games of some sort, which means they won't take as long to get up to speed, whereas if you're looking at a free agent, you're looking at someone that's not even been training with a club necessarily, and it's going to take them a lot longer. So I don't know if it'll take Stevie May that much longer to get up to speed, and I think it would be a good option to complement the players that we have. And obviously, as Richard mentioned, you know, there's that aspect of potentially signing them afterwards and putting in a bid if he was to come here and do well. So it would be a good option for me.
And our final one we're going to discuss as well, very quickly, is the current Rangers manager has apparently been casting lusting eyes over our left back. So where's Andy Considine going to go then?
This was quite the most bizarre byline of the entire transfer window. A Sunday Post piece. And when did the Sunday Post start breaking transfer rumours? A Sunday Post piece that had Andy Considine, not only Andy Considine going, but apparently Warburton being an admirer of Ryan Jack and Niall McGinn. Niall McGinn to Ibrox. Yeah, I can't wait to see that happen. But frankly, out of all those, the one that makes most sense is probably Ryan Jack, because I think he'd fit quite into the style that Warburton likes to play, that kind of slow, laboured build-up. And he's far better, obviously, than the Bradford reject or the Hearts reject that currently play in the midfield for them. But Andy Considine, every season under Derek McInnes, Andy Considine starts the season out with the first 11. And in every single season, by about October, Andy Considine is a mainstay of the first 11 and isn't to be shifted. I have grown to love the man. I had my frustrations down the years with some of his displays, some of his errors. We've all had that, but yeah, I've grown to love him. And two assists on Saturday, so he's finally turning into a marauding, rampaging left-back.
I think he's a completely different player to the Considine that we were so used to maybe 5 or 6 years ago. He's much more assured of himself. I think that's just something that comes with experience. I think there's no doubt that he'll sign a new contract. We always seem to be here with Andy Considine year on year, where you start to wonder where else is he going to go, like, and not in a negative sense. I mean, he's been with the one club his whole career. He clearly enjoys it here. He's clearly settled, you know, with his family in Aberdeen. So it was a bizarre one to read. I'm linked to the Rangers because it just makes no sense logically. So I think I'd be happy to see him stay on, because he's consistent. He's putting on a consistent level of performance nowadays. And he's performing well, usually, whether it's left-back or centre-back. So he's a more reliable option than, to be honest, plenty of the others that we have in those positions. Or rather, in the centre-back position anyway. So surely a new contract is going to materialise in the next, you know, few weeks to a month or so.
That said, I am quite surprised that he hasn't been tied up already, because it's not the way that Derek McInnes generally has liked to operate in his time here. Guys like Ryan Jack or Al McGinn, I can understand wanting to leave it and see what's on the table. And back in the day, we might have always thought that that was the cue for them to go. And it probably will be with Niall McGinn. I think the whispers we've heard have suggested he probably is away at some point, and maybe Ryan Jack will be as well. But then again, we had the Shea Logan situation last year, where I think everybody expected him to go, and he signed on for another 2 years. So I remain hopeful. I think as well that the start of the season, especially around about the time October, November, when you might normally have been having those discussions about contracts, we were in a bit of a state of flux. We just lost that League Cup final. We went to Ibrox and we didn't really show what we can do. And maybe this is McInnes' way of trying to challenge these players to push on, to show him what they can actually do, rather than just be in that comfort zone. We'll see where we end up in June. I think of the five players, five first-team squad members who are out of contract, I think, realistically speaking, I would be surprised to see Pollitt stay on, although I've seen word somewhere that he has been offered a deal. I think Ash Taylor is possibly away. The other three, we'll wait and see. But I'd be very surprised if Andy Constantine is anywhere other than Pittodrie. But as I say, it's still quite unusual that he hasn't already been signed up.
So we've got Friday night's game. We're going to be home to Dundee. Now, before we throw our £2 worth in, I spoke to Dundee fan. We welcomed him back onto the podcast because we spoke to him earlier this season, Jamie Keith, who I tried to talk him down off of the edge. So I'm joined now by Dundee fan Jamie Keith, who's going to give us the inside track on Friday night's opponents. How are you doing, Jamie?
I'm great. It's a pleasure to be on again. Thanks for having me.
It is great to have you back. But now, before we move on to talking about the Dons against Dundee, we obviously have to ask you, what happened at the weekend with St Mirren?
What didn't happen? It's just a case of everything that could go wrong went wrong. The first half alone, I mean, we had a handful of chances. We hit the bar by the post a couple of times, and the keeper had quite a fantastic first half, to be honest. But our inability to stick the ball in the net kind of cost us when they got their goal. And in the second half, they came out and they just outpowered us in the midfield, and it was quite a dismal effort looking back at it.
That's something that will probably give Aberdeen fans a lot of hope for Friday night then. When you were on before, we spoke about obviously a lot of the players that Dundee lost, obviously Greg Stewart, Hemmings. Your best player last season, in my opinion, for a part, or the best football you had, was obviously Gary Harkins. They're all gone. What have Dundee done in terms of trying to replace those guys?
Absolutely nothing. that'll sound brutal, but it's a case of we've foregone all the passing quality, all the vision and creativity we had in the team with those three players, and we've replaced them with a target man and a totally different style. Watching us is very much akin to looking back at early 1980s football nowadays, where it's a case of get the ball up to the target man and try and chase in and get the ball. If you've got a target and it's isolated, like we do a lot now, then you're going to struggle. St Mirren done that to us at the weekend, where Gary McKenzie, former D himself, basically marked Haber out of the game, and it left the other two wide players we have in Craig Whiting and Faisal Elbak too isolated. So they were just running around like headless chickens, and they just ran the game from there.
We all know, as Aberdeen fans, we're no strangers to a cup upset. Was that just a blip, or because you have just came off a decent win against St Johnstone? You beat St Johnstone 3-0, so I mean, was that a blip, or did that mask some problems in the team?
It depends who you ask. I mean, I'm one of the people that, as I'm sure if people listening probably remember, is that I tend to be on the negative side, and I do tend to think that our results we've got this season have been more outliers to our true ability, and that we've not really deserved a lot of the victories we've got. When you look at our long-term form, it's a case of those victories are rather sporadic. They come in spurts. There's no real consistency about it, so I don't think the result of the weekend was that much of a shock. I know there was a few guys that I sit with that had a couple of quid on them at 6-1. And it's just a case of, if you look at the way we line up against teams, it tends to be similar every time. And if you can find our weaknesses and exploit them, we will very rarely be able to target your weaknesses back.
So that's something Derek McInnes has been accused of. You know, he's very unwilling to change. So yeah, I take it Paul Hartley's from that same school then.
I was actually talking talked to a friend that says that managers in Scotland that we tend to big up are very reactive, but with a delay, and I tend to agree with that. I mean, there's points in the game, and there is points in a lot of games when you see it that something needs to change in the middle of the park, whether it be a player that can go up and down the pitch or a player that can get his foot on the ball, and it tends to be 15 minutes before you see any movement or any change, and in that time you lose the game, and it happened at the weekend, that's where their second goal came from. But I definitely think that Hartley is very similar to McInnes, and that they do have formations that they tend to stick with, and whether that's because they can only train them into certain formations or not, I'm not going to comment on, but I do have my doubts about Hartley's ability to coach in different styles.
In that case, we're all going to be talking about a convincing Dons win then.
yeah, well, I was surprised when you said that you weren't too confident yourself. Looking at your home form, I mean, I think you guys have won, what was it, 5 or 6 home games this season?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty solid for a top half team, a top four team. And away from home, we're dreadful. I think it's 2 wins.
Yeah, I mean, we've
2 wins out of 10, so I do think it is a pretty certain result. But
one of the things I did want to ask is, this season with Dundee, is it just that they're lacking, do you think your guys are lacking focus? Or, I mean, because you seem to be struggling this season more. I mean, not being funny about it, but is it because, you know, there's the focus of maybe having the City rivals there? Would that be something that's maybe put eyes been taken off the ball?
Not entirely sure. It might be. I mean, a lot of Dundee fans themselves are hesitant to criticise for that very reason, in that there's not much to compare against in the City this year. As far as the players go, I don't see how that should be affecting them. The Aberdeen game this Friday, it is going to be a huge game for the players to see if they can G themselves up after that result. And it's the sort of game that you might treat more as a derby this season.
I mean, things aren't looking really devastatingly bad for Dundee. I mean, I think you're on 22 points just now.
6 clear Inverness, 5 at Hamilton.
And I know it's far too early to say that, but you know, you're near the top 6, which, again, would that be seen as success for Dundee, or given the kind of current plight and lost the players that you've lost?
Yeah, definitely. When you sell nearly 750,000 of players and you give away a player on a free, Gary Harkins, to finish in the top 6 above where you finished the previous season would be an unquantified success for Paul Hartley. And I think it would definitely leave a bit of egg on my face if they finished in the top 6. But I mean, I don't expect us to be brutally honest. I think Partick and County are real challengers up there. But I think we can see ourselves lingering around the Kilmarnock and Hamlins of the league this season. And I think if we replicated last season's 8th-9th area, I think I'd probably accept that right now, and I'd bite your hand off for it, in truth.
Obviously, your highlight of last season was sending Dundee United down anyway, so you know, you're not going to top that this year, are you?
out of the Scottish, out of the League Cup and bottom 6, I don't think we will, no.
I'm looking forward to it. Friday night football is always a good laugh anyway. It's something that we need to make more of in Scotland. They've taken away our fun trips. Usually a weekend trip to Dundee for a Saturday 3 o'clock was always a good laugh, but it doesn't look like we're going to get any of them, so we need to enjoy these kind of Friday night games.
Definitely, it's the sort of game that's perfect on Friday nights, yeah. I mean, I think any trip to Tynecastle for any team's a great Friday night. A wee join up to Aberdeen on a Friday night is definitely a great night. The floodlights on and a couple of drinks down your throat.
Yeah, well, as long as the floodlights stay on, we'll be laughing. Obviously, I want to wish you all the best for the rest of the season, apart from Friday, Jamie.
But, likewise.
Yeah, thanks very much for coming on. It's been a pleasure, and we'll speak to you again soon.
No problem. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
So that was our chat with Jamie. As positive as he was the last time we were on. Dundee, obviously, not in the best of runs and best of forms at the moment. As Richard mentioned earlier, possibility of going 5 games with an unchanged side for the first time under Derek McInnes. We've got an excellent record in Friday night games. And more importantly, Jack, we've got a chance to move into second place.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a chance that's got to be taken. It is, you know, I don't want to say perfect opposition to do it against, because we have a relatively strong record against them, but it's certainly a good chance, a home game against a team that's struggling, against a team that there seems to be a general apathy surrounding, you know, and support at the moment. So I think if the last time we played them was anything to go by, you know, we were completely dominant. It wasn't really ever in doubt. And you would imagine, in the situation of being at home, we've got to look to have a comfortable victory there with an unchanged side, hopefully keep that consistency going.
Well, I think more importantly than the unchanged team for five games running, it's a chance to make it five wins in the spin, which again would be a pretty good reaction to what was a lot of criticism that was building pre-Christmas. As I say, I don't think that's so far away that it has dissipated entirely. And I think we'll find if we drop points on Friday, the same people will be out in force again. It's a game I'm looking forward to. I'm back in the point where I'm really looking forward to going and seeing this side now. I think there's goals in them. I think there's good football on them. Dundee are a side who, I think, to Hartley's credit, do generally try and come out and play some football.
Now, as we alluded to earlier, it was a shocker of a result for them against St Mirren in the Cup. But they did have some decent results. They went and they beat St Johnston 3-0. They've obviously got the big target man up front in Marcus Haber. I personally feel they're a bit of a one-dimensional side, but we've seen before that defensively we can come unglued there. Our defences, our two centre-halves are probably still the weakest part of the team. Despite the fact I'm saying this as we won 4-0 at the weekend, there's a team really soon going to be on the wrong end of a hiding from us, surely, isn't there?
It's dangerous to use those words, I always think. But, but you know, goal scoring hasn't really been too much of an issue this season. It's actually the highest number of goals per game in the league since 92-93, which, given that, again, you often see quite a lot of online criticism of the manager for being negative, it might surprise some people. Yeah, you're probably right to pinpoint the centre-halves. And the fact that the centre-halves were changing sort of game on game, you know, Reynolds and Taylor know what each other's games are about. Yes, they've got flaws, quite big flaws in the case of Ash Taylor. They're generally good enough for most of what this league can throw at them. Mark Reynolds does have difficulty sometimes against big physical strikers, as Marcus Haber is, but hopefully Ash Taylor is able to handle him. And we're able to take the 3 points. It's a big weekend. The Rangers, they're away at Motherwell. Their away record is nothing to write home about. And then Hearts have got Celtic this weekend as well. So it's a good opportunity to go into second, even with that game against Motherwell in hand.
That is something, Jack. I mean, you know, Motherwell obviously are playing Rangers, and had it not been for some pretty horrific brain failure from their defence, then, you know, Rangers would be finding themselves in a replay. So I think there's a tough game in that for them.
You've got to imagine the Motherwell players. I mean, they were, you know, judging from the Mark McGee interview and Lasley's comments after the game, they were absolutely devastated at how that game panned out. And it was something that was within their own grasp. And like you said, just mistakes that cost them. So they'll be looking to rectify that. They've got the home advantage this time around. It's surely a good chance for Motherwell to at least get a point if they play as they have the potential to. You know, they have some quality players. They have some players that can surely cause you know, the Rangers' backline some problems. So it's a good chance for us. We just need to concentrate on our job and make sure that we get the 3 points on Friday and sit back and relax and hopefully enjoy a positive result for Motherwell on Saturday.
So yes, we'll be covering that game on the Buy the Minute website. We'll have live coverage. If you can't get to Pittodrie, do join in the conversation, join in the chat with us on Friday night. Now we're going to head on to our feedback topic, which was, has there been an opposition goal or a save or a performance or just anything in general from the opposition that you've applauded at Pittodrie? We had quite a lot of responses to this on Twitter. Tosh McKinley's volley at the paddock for Hearts in a 3-1 defeat of the Dons in October 1989. That's Brian Braidwood. Any idea, Richard?
I dimly remember the game. I can't remember Tosh McKinley ever doing anything good in his career. So, but I'll take Brian's word for it.
Obviously, a lot of people mentioned Ross County and Martin Woods. Was it what 40-yard screamer last season? Which, you know, well, the less said about it, the better. It was a depressing day all round. We've got Duncan Smith gave us a Peter Lovrenkrantz overhead kick in 2005. But we can't give him too much credit because even though the ball was out before the cross, because you know what, we never give them anything. I think quite rightly a lot of us will agree with this. Fauci says that Jim Leighton, when he was in goals for Hibs in the Cup replay in 1997, it's Jim Leighton. No, even though he played for Hibs, no, Don's hero, and quite rightly deserved a round of applause from us.
Yeah, that's fine. Except they knocked us out in penalty kicks that night.
Well, yeah, Richard, tell me about your one.
Well, I risk being drummed out of the Red Army, I think, for this. And it's, it definitely falls into the category of grudgingly saying, well done, you bastard, underneath your breath, as opposed to actual applause. But it was an end-of-season game in 1992 against Rangers. Willie Miller had taken charge during the course of that season, and our season had petered out into a fifth or sixth place finish. Rangers had won the league at a canter because we weren't there to challenge them. But we had them on the last day of the season. And, yeah, we lost 2-0. And Ali McCoy scored both of them. And his second goal was a screamer from about 35 yards, which is very un-McCoy-like. As I say, I wouldn't say there was much in the way of applause from the home end that afternoon. But it's a goal that stuck with me as being kind of, yeah, okay, fair play.
We'll be taking a vote on whether you're getting thrown out of the Red Army or not on that one, Richard. To be decided. We've got Jody Jameson, who was on our podcast a few weeks ago, tells us he applauded a Rudy Scatchell 30-yard screamer at Tynecastle in a 3-0 defeat. It's kind of opening old wounds here, this. I don't know if this was the best idea. A better one, Mark Bruce tells us about Jordan McGee's handball. That was an absolute gift. Yeah, I applauded that. That was great from him, wasn't it? The Nikita Jelovic overhead kick in one of the last visits that the old Rangers made to Pittodrie. Pretty good goal. A little bit slack by Xander Diamond, I think, but, you know, Colin Lockhart quite rightly tells us, remember giving Big Brian Irvine a clap when at Dens Park, quite rightly as well. Another guy who, you know, is a Don's hero, and we wished all the best. Jack, talk to me about your one.
Well, my one was actually from quite a wee while back. I remember being at a game up at Pittodrie where we were playing at home to Dundee. It was actually in, it seems to have been in 2000, judging from the article I have up about it, but it was actually Claudio Caniggia's debut coming off the bench for Dundee, and he scored the second that day, and he was quite like a class act. But on that day, I just remember an absolutely surreal performance from Rab Douglas, and I think it might have been his last game before he moved to Celtic, and it was just one of those days where no matter what was thrown at him, he was keeping it out. There was double saves, triple saves and all of that, and the highlight reel was actually posted up by the SPFL Facebook page recently, and I watched it again, and he was unbelievable. And at his peak, he was a very good goalkeeper, so it was just one of those days where you just had to kind of accept, yep, that's a good goalkeeper, fair play. That said, looking back at the team lines from that day, we had a pretty hopeless team, so, I mean, it's kind of actually shuddering looking back at some of the names in that. It was a pretty bad team, so I can imagine why they weren't able to find, you know, the key to get a goal that day. But regardless of that, on a day that probably was afterwards a lot maybe might have been written about Caniggia, it was certainly Rab Douglas's day because he put in a fantastic performance.
We've got a few more here. Cooley sent us a video, obviously, Aidan McGeady, February 2008, when the Celtic beat us 5-1. And Aidan McGeady had a pretty great game that day, to be fair, even from an Aberdeen point of view, scored a couple of really good goals as well. From Al Watt, who was one of our guests on the podcast last season, Don's flop Jim Hamilton for Motherwell in a 3-1 reverse at Pittodrie in Jimmy Calderwood's first season. A 40-yard stonker.
That was an absolute screamer, that one. I remember that one.
Al also gives us, well, it's now, and it's in a pre-season friendly, but a Peter Undlove inspired Coventry ripping us a new one as well. And he said plenty of applause for the Sky Blues that day. Graham Boyd gives us Tom Rogic's goal against us last October in Pittodrie. It is one of those where you kind of mutter under your breath and say fair play. He had a pretty good game that day. Couple more. Stevie May, Scottish Cup semi-final at Ibrox. Gave him absolute pelters in the League Cup semi-final. Scored two and he more than got us back for that. Quite a few people also sent in Benito Carbone for Torino early in the 90s. I do remember this one. It was an absolutely phenomenal performance by him. You kind of just have to put your hands up and say, you know, well done. We've got the guys from, well, the AFC History Mag have sent a couple in for us as well. Gunter Netzer from Borussia Mönchengladbach in a 1972 UEFA tie was applauded off at half-time. He was just a class act. Now, Richard, you're too young to remember that one as well, aren't you?
Yeah, I wasn't even born for that.
No. We've got a couple more. While not an Aberdeen one, Andy Slav gave us Paul Gascoigne at Wembley versus Scotland. Still think it was a great goal to this day. Well, okay. My one is not really a goal or that. It's more an accumulation. When Aberdeen lost in the Scottish Cup in February 2010 to Raith Rovers, we'd taken them to a replay back at Pittodrie, which was disgraceful that we even needed a replay to get there. And then we got beat 1-0 and went out. And you look at the Aberdeen lineup that day, much like you said earlier on, Jack, some really horrible names when you look at the team. You know, you've got Ifill, McDonald, Jim Patterson, Kerr, Stephen McLean, Michael Payton, some really horrible names. And of course, lo and behold, Gregory Taddy knocks one in, beats us 1-0. And we were, and it wasn't necessarily such a phenomenal performance by them, but we were absolutely wretched that day. And Raith, you know, thoroughly deserved their win. And it really pains me to applaud anybody that beats Aberdeen. But on that day, I think we felt we had to. It was not a good evening. This is our last one we're going to, because we've got loads of these people saying this one, which is, of course, Brian Easton's belter for St Johnston in last season's 5-1 game. It was the opening goal. I think a lot of people were able to give it a wee round of applause and say, oh, well done, but we'll come back. Unfortunately, it didn't happen like that, and we got hammered 5-1. But even looking back at it now, it was a hell of a goal. I mean, Brian Easton will never score another goal like that in his life, though, will he, Richard?
No. That was one that came to mind for me as well. Quite recently, and you're right, it was like 10 minutes in and people were like, yeah, and no, Brian Easton never will, even if he does pitch up here at Peter Rodri, which, by the way, he won't.
And that brings our podcast to a close for this evening. I just want to say a very special thank you to everybody out there. Our Lee Richardson interview that we put out, we mentioned it on the Twitter account, we're going to mention it just here as well, has been the most listened podcast that the guys at Buy the Minute AFC have done. It's also been the most listened podcast on all across the Buy the Minute network, so get that right up you, Buy the Minute Celtic. So just a big thank you to all the Aberdeen fans out there, and anybody who's a fan of Lee Richardson that listened to that, really appreciate it. If you want to help us out, please go on, if you're on iTunes or wherever, if you subscribe, please rate and review. That brings us to a close for this week. Remember, we will have the coverage of the Dundee game on Friday night on the Buy the Minute website. All that remains is for me to say thank you to Richard Hay.
Thank you very much, Martin.
A special thank you to Jack from Stats and Miniskirts.
No, thank you. It's good to be on.
It's great to have you back. And I've been Martin Clunas. Here's to another 3 points on Friday night for the Dons. Come on, you Reds.